Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody. Episode 339 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate it on this very snowy Friday evening here in Michigan. Stay safe. Stay warm. If you are listening to us because you have nothing else better to do, I appreciate that. At least you chose us, which you chose right. Let's go around and see what everybody is drinking, starting with Rob. Rob, what do you got?
I have from Trader's Brewing a Bart's Badass IPA. I think it's Badass.
Great name.
Daniel, what do you got? Anything?
Yeah, I've got a Burke's Brewing Unforgiven Porter. And then if that's not enough, I've got a Shining Peak Coffee Stout.
Are those New Zealand beers, I'm assuming?
They are, yes.
All right. For myself, I am pulling the neck for today also. I got a Vandermill Hard Cider. Just the regular ass cider that they have. And then I've got a Italian style Rubicon Pilsner from Old Nation that I am drinking. I did not do my, my 2 for $2.50 tall boys this week.
No, you do that. If you're doing a Nick, you do that to punish yourself for some reason that I don't understand.
Yeah. I also drink Labatt Blue for $2.50 and not Natty Ice for $2.29.
Those are $2 for $2.29, aren't they?
Yeah, 2 for $2.29 or 2 for $2.50 or
gotcha. Spend the extra 11 cents or
yeah, extra 11 cents for my Labatt Blue Light. Yeah. We do have a guest. It's been a minute since we've had one. The first one of the new year. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are and what you do within the world of craft beer.
Is that me?
That's you. And what are you drinking?
Right on. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bart Hensley with Trader's Brewing Company, located on the northwest side of Indianapolis, Indiana. Just chilling tonight, man. It's been a hectic week and drinking a little heckin' good Kolsch, one of our specialty beers on tap right now. So I stocked up earlier this week with a little Sixtel keg of it to bring to my house to put on draft. And I thought, what better opportunity than drink a draft beer on the Better on Draft podcast, right?
That's perfect. My first question, how did you get into the world of craft beer? Like, what was your entry point into drinking craft beer or discovering it?
My father-in-law, Dale, he's been a longtime home brewer, going home in college with my wife, who's obviously my girlfriend at the time, kind of meeting him, hanging out with him in the kitchen. And then when my mother-in-law kicked us out of the kitchen from brewing home or making homebrew, doing it on the back patio, we had some family friends that started a brewery in Western Massachusetts, Brew Practitioners out of Florence, Massachusetts. And they moved down to Springfield, Massachusetts recently, helping them kind of get started up, building stuff out, going out there and helping Joe with some batches, really kind of made us want to do it here in Indy. So definitely my father-in-law was a big inspiration. Honestly, until that point, I was drinking shitty vodka at frat parties. So he really kind of opened my mind culturally when it came to the whole craft beer world, I guess.
Looking at your menu over in Indianapolis, you definitely have a wide variety of styles. It looks like you've got about a dozen taps or so in there, and you have everything from a coffee porter to a Belgian blonde to a Belgian triple and a Kolsch. Does the area of Indianapolis really get catered to that wide variety, or is this something more in your niche where you're one of the only few people in town that kind of do this spread of beer?
You know, it's funny. I've heard that. I've heard kind of downtown Indy's more of the multi scene, where maybe the suburbs or north side are more of the hop heads. I don't know necessarily for that to be true or not. For me, I stick to brewing beers I like. I figure if I like them enough, I'm going to put forth the effort enough. I'm going to put the heart into it. And that's going to kind of show in our beers, and hopefully other people like them too. It seems like we kind of get rid of them fairly well in the tap room. So really just kind of focusing on that. I've always been kind of getting into the beer styles, I was always a big Belgian fan. So that's a big inspiration for us too. I know we've got multiple Belgian inspired breweries around town. But yeah, just kind of brewing across the rainbow, so to speak, just trying to figure out A, what I like, and B, what everybody else likes too, and ultimately what sells the best.
Has there been a beer or a few beers that you've brewed because you wanted to brew that really just didn't take to your customers?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. Last year about this time, we did a smoked beer. So we used the smoked barley in it, came up with a really sweet name, sweet logo for it. And it just, man, it sat on tap. It was our Duffer the Puffer smoked German Pilsner. I loved it, but I don't think maybe the clientele enjoyed it as much. And maybe that goes back to those specific beer styles, you know, that are specific for those neighborhoods. But yeah, that's funny you mentioned that, because that was one that I dug a lot, and, you know, it just sat there, which is cool with me because I would just kind of turn that into my shift beer.
I was going to say, did that make its way home instead of just sitting at the, okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A couple kegs came back to the house, a couple sixtels and multiple growler fills. That's for sure. And you know, I get it too. I mean, that's not going to be a beer that your everyday beer drinker, excuse me, I'm drinking beer, so I'm burping. Your everyday beer drinker is going to necessarily sit there and drink pint after pint of. I guess only freaks like me do that, you know.
Even we've had Live Oak on the show. We had Deucet on a couple years ago, and obviously Live Oak is one of the more industry standards when it comes to making a litany of smoked beers, and they get away with it because I think that's kind of what their niche is. They're known for it, so people go out there. But I don't know if Dan or Rob have ever felt this way, but like smoked beer is one of those things where I can drink one, maybe one and a half glasses, and afterwards, like that flavor profile is just so strong that I just can't do it anymore. Dan, I know you love Live Oak. What do you say?
Yeah. In fact, you're absolutely right. And not just Live Oak, because they make a lot of good Rausch beers. I think a couple of weeks ago, I actually brought up the Alaskan Smoked Porter. It's a really good beer, but it's one and done. That smoke just gets to you at some point, where you really do need something to kind of clean the palate after drinking it.
Go on, Rob.
I was going to say, I like smoked beers with food a lot, which usually paces it out and helps a lot. Well, it kind of depends on the food, but smoked meats or meat in general, I guess, is really kind of what I pair it with. I'm thinking here of Daredevil Downtown, Speedway has good smoked beers on, and they have some simple bar food.
So for Traders Brewing over in Indianapolis, what kind of like sets you guys apart versus your competition that's out there, that you think really brings the customers over to your place?
Yeah. It's definitely the people. There's a million places in Indy, just like any other big city around, to go get beer. And I really think it's the people that kind of bring people in and keep people in. Our bartenders are the best. Our regular crowd is great. Our Tuesday trivia folks are great. It really is, at the end of the day, nobody wants to sit and drink a beer alone. It's the company you surround yourself with that I think maybe sets us apart from other places. Sometimes it's weird for me to think that, you know, I'm able to brew beer professionally and make a living out of it. I definitely think there's a lot of better beers out there, especially in the Indianapolis area in and of itself. So I think for us, it's really just the people that sets us apart, whether it's folks working for us or customers or, you know, just neighbors of ours. We really do have a good group and a tight group in our tap room.
Yeah, I'm one of those Tuesday Trivia Quest customers, but I've been up there pretty much since you guys opened. Because
absolutely.
You happened to be on my grocery route, which it was really nice when you opened.
Are you a Jungle Jim's guy? Is that not Jungle Jim's? What's the Jungle Jim's of Cincinnati? That'd be a far drive.
I do go there, but not regularly. Right. Yeah. Costco.
Oh, Costco. No, okay. Yeah. I forget about Costco.
Yeah. Cause we have one in Avon now. So my grocery route has completely changed. I don't have to go by Trader's anymore.
Rats.
But yeah, I would second that. I've called your brewery a neighborhood brewery on this podcast before. Like it just seems to cater to the people who are getting out of work in that area, the people who live in that area and all that very, very well. Which kind of leads me to my question. Do you have any plans for expansion? You've been, in that location for a while. You don't distribute widely that I know of. You used to distribute across the street to a couple of the places over there. I don't know if you still do or not. Do you have any plans?
Right now, no. I mean, my fear and just kind of looking around the indie beer scene, maybe just the industry in general, is I'm always afraid of us maybe getting too big for our britches too soon. Kind of like I said earlier, there's a million places to get beer around Indianapolis. And I like for us to really kind of carve that footprint on that Northwest side. And really hone in on our original tap room. I would like to in the future. I just don't know where that spot would be. I always see that spot being a production spot, but would agree that a second tap room and maybe more of a neighborhood area, or maybe more of kind of like walking trail area, somewhere that's kind of has, maybe a little bit better outdoor patio sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know, man. We're just a little family business right now. And just to even think that we have a brewery in operation that people come and drink and returning customers at that sometimes is kind of crazy for me to wrap my finger around. But yeah, in the future, that would be really kind of cool to have a second spot. I just don't know if we're quite there yet. We just added two more fermenters back in October and just kind of keeping those bad boys filled. So future's looking bright. I just focus one batch at a time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I can see the advantages of, continuing to brew for yourself instead of brewing for whatever contracts you might have with, whoever you're supplying and all that too.
Sure. So. Yeah. And I think there's a huge freedom with that. And like I said, kind of like what I was saying earlier about, finding beers that I like and making sure they're great for our customers is my number one goal. And, just continuing that, and whether that's opening somewhere on a different side of Indy or, staying where we're at, just keeping having fun with it and trying to make the beers as great as possible.
Yeah. I was hoping for an answer like you're moving to Brownsburg or opening something in Brownsburg. That's okay.
Right outside your neighborhood, Rob.
That'd be great. That'd be great. So I think I first met you at Whitestown, which was a beer competition, but I could have, cause it's been so many years. I could have that wrong, but are you still out there on the competition scene, or do you do the competition scene, or are you just doing festivals to pour at festivals and kind of how's that working out?
Yeah. When we first opened up for the exposure of it, we were going to any festival that was thrown our way. The weekends are kind of a tougher time. Having a family now, kind of focusing on the family stuff on the weekends. So we really just go to the festivals that we want to go to. The next one I think we're going to is Frigid Digits in February over there at Centerpoint Brewing, which is always such a freaking blast. This will be our third or fourth year going. And at first it was like, man, standing outside in the cold all day, like what the hell, but that's actually a really fun one. Competition wise, no, we've never entered our beers in. I don't want to say I'm a lazy bastard, but like, they're just, sometimes it hits you like, oh shit, it's like beginning of June. I need to get those, enter in some crowlers or something like that. And then, butterfly flies by and I maybe lose track of what's going on. But yeah, I would like to enter some in sometime, maybe this year, if I can set something in my calendar to do that. But yeah, outside of serving in the tap room, just kind of doing the sampling events, the ones we want to go to. I think we've seen you, Rob, at Hogan Farms a couple times the pumpkin patch there in Brownsburg, and that's one we'll always go to. As long as they will invite us, we'll definitely go to that, because that's always a fun one.
It is fun drinking in a pumpkin patch out in kind of as rural Brownsburg as you're going to get. Yep.
You're right. Yeah. That's about as rural as it gets in Brownsburg anymore. But yeah, that's about it for, I don't even know if we're going to the, and it sounds terrible, the Winter Beer Fest coming up here soon. Is that in January or in February? Maybe we are going to that one.
That is in February. I think it is the weekend after Frigid Digits this year.
Okay. So maybe that is the one after Frigid Digits. Yes. So I think we'll be at that one. We try to go to that one every year. Sometimes I used to fall on my birthday weekend, which typically, doing family stuff on the birthday weekend. But if that's after Frigid Digits, we'll most likely be at that one too.
Okay. I will also be there.
Right on, hell yeah.
With a ticket, though.
Do you do the pretzel necklaces?
Last year, I dressed up as, I think it was the pickle last year. Okay. So I don't do the pretzel necklace. Instead, I dress up in costumes.
Oh, okay, there you go. I know, I'm always so envious, especially like 2 or 3 hours into that. You see, somebody walk up with all those pretzels on there. It's like, can I just bite your necklace real quick? But I guess you shouldn't ask strangers to bite them.
Yeah, probably not, no. So I have one in mind from your repertoire, but is there a beer style you haven't done for a while that you might want to bring back?
The Brood IPA, baby.
That's the one actually, I had in mind.
I almost actually brewed it today, but I ended up doing a West Coast IPA today. I love that Brood. Bobby and I did that from Mind Over Mash when we did our first collab together, and you don't really see that style anymore. It kind of came and went pretty damn quick for whatever reason, but I love it. I mean, it really is the exact opposite of kind of the haze phase, kind of New England hazier stuff, which I'm not dogging on. I love those too. I actually had a few of those last night. But that Brood IPA is damn good. If I can ever get my hands on one, I try, but they're few and far between. Another bourbon barrel. I need to get another big stout in a bourbon barrel. I just need to get my hands on a fucking bourbon barrel.
Yeah, well, right. You've got an anniversary coming up, so that seems like the thing to do for it, right?
It does, right? Maybe not for that mere fact, right? As everybody does some sort of bourbon barrel, at least it seems like for an anniversary. I don't know. I do need to kind of get my ducks in a row and figure out what's going to be going on tap for that, so.
No, I do got to say, there's nothing wrong with doing a bourbon barrel release, especially for an anniversary. There's a reason so many of them get made. I mean, people love them. And unfortunately, there's a lot of places that don't make them a lot of the time. So it's always a nice treat to find them out there. So I've got a pretty decent question here for you, Bart. And I hope Ken's paying attention. So first off, do you do flights at your brewery, and how do you feel about them?
As long as I'm not pouring them, they're fucking awesome, we do flights. We have a joke in the tap room. The only flight, there's a bartender. He's like, the only flight I pour is a 16-ounce flight. And it's like, I get it. But yeah, we do the flights.
Good. Absolutely. There, Ken has this opinion. It's just an opinion, of course, that flights shouldn't exist. And they're totally terrible. So I just wanted to get that out there, see how someone with a brewery actually feels about it.
Gave you his opinion too. He says, as long as I'm not pouring them.
That's fine. But they're awesome. So don't forget that part. We're not editing history here.
I'm the one that does all the edits, Dan.
Just anyways. Anyways, I noticed on your website, you have an option for donation requests. Talk to us a little bit about that. Have you had a lot of companies or organizations reach out to you, and what have you done for them?
Yeah. My wife kind of heads all the donation, kind of the technology side of it. That's why it took me 25 minutes to essentially click a link and hit two buttons tonight. But yeah, we get them probably once a day, to be honest with you, because we get email notifications. One, we did one for MLS a while back. I think we've got one coming up here soon for like the Girl Scouts. That's kind of one area of the donations I don't really have much going on with. I think my wife and maybe even sister-in-law kind of take care of all that.
Okay, it's still a really great thing. You don't see that too often where someone can go right to a brewery. We always hear about breweries basically, you know, running out of shoestring budget. People think they're just raking in money most of the time when it's actually not the case. Tell us a little bit about the Indianapolis craft scene. You know, I'm thinking back, we've been doing the show a while. I don't think we've had too many breweries from your area. Just tell us what it's like a little bit as far as the overall scene there.
Oh man, it's badass. I mean, I there's not one what I might call like corner of Indy that doesn't have good beer. And I think a lot of times it gets looked past because it's kind of, we're kind of a flyover city. I mean, you're here for the 500 and that's literally the only thing people know about Indianapolis, but our beer scene's huge. And like I said, it's such a big enough city that I do think that there's pockets of, you know, flavors in each spot, whether you're downtown, or you're up on out in the suburbs somewhere, or even out in some of the rural areas, we're starting to get craft breweries. And I think that's great. I mean, that's one of those things that anything that can be made from scratch is better than something that's mass produced. And it just goes to show you that people really do care about what's in their glass, and instead of maybe, you know, just drinking something to get drunk or whatever. But yeah, we've got a lot of great breweries. We were inspired by, I would say the main ones that we were inspired by were definitely Beer Brewery. The guys over there at Deviate, which aren't too far from us. And then our friends out in Massachusetts, kind of what they were doing too, just for the mere fact that the independence of being able to brew what you want and keeping it on tap and again, enjoying it with other people, I think is the most important part of it.
Now, I'm actually stealing this from Rob. He gave us a lot of information about the area since he's the only one from Indy. According to him, it seems like the craft beer market there is crowded. Does it feel that way? And how do you compete in that?
I don't know. We're not on any grocery store shelf. You literally have to come to us if you want to try our beer. So yeah, there are a number of breweries, but I still don't think there are enough, you know, kind of talking to some other brewers in the area, how great would it be for Indianapolis to be that destination spot where you come to the north side of Indy and it's literally just like going downtown Denver where it's tap room after tap room after tap room after tap room. So I can understand maybe what Rob's saying there, but I personally don't think there are enough breweries and or tap rooms in Indy yet.
Do you know roughly how many? Because you mentioned Denver. We've talked about it several times. They have over 150 or 250. I can't remember. It's a really big number. They have more than LA and Phoenix, which are, you know, the second and fifth biggest city out there. So yeah, you're definitely right. It's crowded, but all of them seem to stay in business. Rob, do you know maybe around how many?
I know there's more than 200 in Indiana. I've got a walking tour of Indianapolis map that I keep up track of, and it's for walking from brewery to brewery. And last time I looked, there was like 20 on that list, 25 maybe, and it's, I think, 5 miles end to end. So it's not really that long of a walk.
Rob, is that by chance down College downtown?
Yeah, it starts at Center Point. Still goes to Flat 12, even though Flat 12 is not there, but the Provisions place, that's a Pax Verum spot. So that's still on the list. But then it gets all the way down to Fountain Square.
Oh, wow. That is a little bit of a walk in, isn't it?
So
yeah, I don't know.
Done that walk a few times. It's a lot of fun. You know, the bits that we remember.
If there's 200 in Indiana, would you say Indianapolis has half of that, or do you think less than 100?
It might be less than 100, but not much. And if we're including Carmel Fisher's
right.
even, then yeah, it could be 100 or more.
Yeah. I don't know. And I also feel like Indy compared to maybe other cities, I don't know, where are you guys out of? I heard Michigan maybe.
We are a little bit spread out. I am in Ypsilanti, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Dan is in Phoenix, Arizona, and Rob is shit. Right around the corner stalking you.
He's in your backyard right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Indy's a bit spread out too. So like kind of like Rob said, you could be considered an Indy brewery, but then probably be better part of an hour away from another Indy brewery too. So I don't know, man. I definitely think there are, you know, a lot of good breweries, but I don't necessarily think more beer is a bad thing. But
I would say your corner, the Northwest corner, there's not as much. You got to get up into Zionsville, which, and even when you get up there, there's what, North High and
right.
And then
do they brew on site there?
I don't think so.
No.
So yeah,
I get Danny Boys up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We are kind of in more of a desolate brewery area. And we really, even Hendricks County just has one or two, right? Or just the one.
Yeah, we might be down to just the one now.
Yeah. And isn't that wild? I mean, that's literally the county that touches Indy, and there's just one over here.
Yeah.
Better on Draft is made possible thanks to our sponsor, North Center Brewing in Northville, Michigan. Open Tuesday to Sunday, North Center provides a fun atmosphere with amazing beer. Try their Bobby English while playing shuffleboard, or wash down their classic Reuben sandwich with a glass of painkiller. Find them online at northcenterbrewing.com. Better on Draft is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor. Located on Rochester Road in Rochester Hills, go visit Jack and see why he is known as one of the best beer and bourbon stores in the state. A large variety of singles, wine, booze, and snacks, Zatuna Liquor is your one-stop shop before a party. Better on Draft is sponsored by Craft Tapped. Currently located in 11 states, including Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, Craft Tapped is a monthly subscription that pays for itself after just one visit to your local brewery. Use the code BOD at checkout and receive 15% to any membership, not just for Michigan fans. For Michigan fans, get 50% off your first two pints at each venue you go to, including Better on Draft-sponsored North Center Brewing and 2022 March Draftness winner Copper Hop in St. Clair Shores.
Now, another question I have for you. Talk to us about your core beers. I noticed you have the four that you do year-round. What made you choose those four beers, and have you ever considered adding more to that list?
Yeah, you know, we have the four core, the Badass IPA, which is kind of our West Coast. Damn near a double IPA, all citra dry hopped or all citra hopped. Then we got the building one, the pale ale, which is kind of a 5.6er. Rob's drinking the Badass right now. It used to be Bart's Badass, but the funny story about that is I was a teacher, and I wasn't necessarily told to drop the name, but I was kind of maybe I guess I was told that it was a bad idea to have your name on a beer. Little did they know I wasn't going to be in teaching much longer, at least at that time. So we just dropped it to Badass, and it just took so long to write Bart's Badass IPA on a growler lid too.
Were you teaching kindergarten, or were worried about the kids learning bad things?
No. I was a special education teacher here in the town we live in for about 7 years. And then I guess 3 or 4 years into starting the brewery, was able to kind of quit and do that full time.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So we got the building one pale ale, which is some more citra mosaic hops, the Pater's beer, which is a Belgian blonde, just a really easy drinking Belgian pilsner. And then the Marlowe amber ale, which is essentially, and I don't, you know, knock me for saying this, but this was a fat tire clone that I had kind of rigged up, kind of doing fat tire clones with my father-in-law back in the kitchen. His favorite beer is an amber ale, and so we named it after him. His middle name's Marlowe. And then the other question about adding more core beers to it, we always keep some sort of hazy on, some sort of New England, but I like to change out what hops are going into those, so always some sort of hazy. And then it's nice now kind of having some additional tanks that we can play around with and, you know, have some different beers on throughout the year.
you bring up, you know, making the fat tire clone. I feel like even when I started home brewing, that's one of the first things I made. I feel like that's a route everyone goes. So you bringing that up, I actually have another question for you talking about fat tire. I actually last week, about a week ago, I had the displeasure of tasting the new version. Have you had a chance to try that as of yet? And if so, what do you think about it?
I have not. No. How long ago did they come out with the new version? What's the new part of this version?
So it's been probably
at least a year.
Has it been a year? It is basically, it reminded me of like a Miller Lite, honestly. It was, I told these guys that, you know, they might just need to kill the brand and go in all in on Voodoo Ranger like they seem to be doing, but it's a real disappointment to see what it's turned into.
Yeah, dude, I didn't realize Ranger turned into Voodoo Ranger until like 2 years ago. I went in because I was looking for like the Ranger and a Rampant, which I always thought the Rampant was a badass double IPA or a good double IPA. And I was like, what the hell happened to it? And it's like, oh, they're called Voodoo Ranger now, which I get it, marketing side, but it kind of makes you it makes you really miss the old school ones. Founders Breakfast Stout did that recently too, right? They don't have the baby on the label anymore. Now it's something else, and now it's like a chocolate breakfast stout.
Yeah,
and I don't know. That just maybe goes to show you how often I go into the liquor store and look anymore. But yeah, I was kind of – I thought that was wild that both the breakfast stout and the Rampant and Ranger, especially that Rampant, man, that was such a damn good beer. But oh, well. You figure out Santa Claus isn't real and it all goes down the drain from
that's absolutely true. And you know, it feels, you mentioned the Ranger. I haven't had that beer in probably 8 or 9 years. So I get what you mean. It seems like they've gone towards that cornering the, you know, every 7-Eleven, every gas station that sells beer is where they've gone with that. Rob called it mediocrity, I believe, is what I remember the term was. But it gets people drinking craft beer, you know, and Sierra Nevada seems to be going after that market now too, with their Little Things line. So it obviously works. So people are seeing that. I want to touch on, you had mentioned making, you know, we talked about the bourbon barrel beers. Talk to us about what you've made in the past and how hard is it for you to get bourbon barrels to make these in?
Yeah. If you want to get a bourbon barrel from Kentucky, you almost spend more, at least outlets I'm going through, spend more on shipping the barrel up here. And hell, Kentucky's literally one state away. We've had some success with some distilleries downtown Indy, but you know, again, not a true bourbon barrel. I don't even know the difference between bourbon and whiskey, 'cause I don't really do the hard liquor. But yeah, it just seems like the barrels aren't expensive. They just get you on that freight charge. And it's not necessarily so much of that. Probably a little bit of it too is me just not doing them. It's a patience thing too. I'm somebody that's like, all right, they hit our gravity. Let's go. Let's keg it up. Let's drink it. But yeah, I guess I need to start kind of looking into getting a little bit of patience and then just brew a big ass beer and throw it in a barrel for a couple months.
Do we need to get Bobby to come up there? Doesn't Bobby help you do the barrels?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and Bobby's the barrel master. He actually gave me a piece of equipment to transfer them to and everything. So I know we're going to have to get Bobby up there. I don't think Bobby's seen the new tank since we got him put in. So I'd love for him to come up and check him out and brew something together.
All right, just wanted to clarify, since you weren't sure the difference between bourbon and whiskey, I'm sure other people don't as well. Needs to be 51% corn in the mash, and it has to be made in America. That's actually threw me off until I remembered looking for bourbon barrel aged beers where I'm at currently. You know, no one's got bourbon barrels here because they're not coming, you know, 8,000 miles. So it's, you want to look for the whiskey barrels. Final question. I'm going to shoot it over to Ken here for a couple more. Rob had asked you beer you haven't made in a while. What's a style you haven't made as of yet that you want to try?
Question for me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, now that we kind of have these newer tanks with a little bit of glycol capability, definitely doing some lagers. I'd love to get some sort of Marzen or, you know, Oktoberfest style beer in September, but messing around with being able to control that temperature is going to be huge for us. So doing more stuff like the Kolsch, doing stuff like the lagers. I'd love to do a steamer beer. We used to have a brewery down in Plainfield, just south of where Rob and I live. They did a California Common that was freaking awesome. And that's just not a style of beer that you see around. And maybe just the mere fact that it's such an old school styled beer. I think that'd be a fun one to do, and maybe mess around with some fruit added to something like that. I think this year, especially, we're really going to be focusing on a lot of the fruit forward beers. That seems to be what sells. The second our kettle sours kick on tap, we get the question, when's the next kettle sour? When's the next kettle sour? And so just trying to keep up with those two. But yeah, I'd love to kind of get into messing around with some of these lager yeast or some of these hybrid yeast that we can really kind of play around with, and especially do some of these beers we haven't been able to do before.
Getting to know you a little bit further, of course, in our chat, if you guys aren't listening live, you can listen to us live 7:15 PM Eastern on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, plenty of other places, Instagram, X, we're even live. Greg Kendall is excited for the Oktoberfest that is upcoming, hopefully this year for you. To get to know you a little bit further, so you were a special ed teacher prior to joining the brewing industry. My first question now, not necessarily, like, were any students in the entire school, did they find you before you opened the brewery and left teaching? Because we've had that with there was an Ohio podcast that actually brewed beer, home brewed, opened up a brewery, and all their kids found them online. And they were all, like, worried they were going to lose their job when they were found out.
Oh, no. The population, my kids, they were such sweethearts. They, I don't necessarily know if they were on the internet as much. I taught life skills special education. So the okay. population of folks I worked with, no, some of their parents knew. And it's funny, some of their parents actually came to the bar while we still had it open. And it wasn't anything like me passing out coupons or anything at parent-teacher conferences, but just kind of casually came up in conversation. That is something that, you know, it's funny, when I was teaching, I would never wear my school logo out to eat, especially, or, you know, if we were out drinking or at a bar or something. And that's something I think non-teachers take for granted. And my wife would always kind of roll her eyes, like, it's just a shirt. It's like, well, I don't want to get in trouble, you know? So I can kind of see where they're coming from, their kids finding them. If one of my students came in that were, you know, now of age to drink a beer, I'd drink a beer with them. Most of my students I actually worked with were 18 to 22. In the state of Indiana, you can stay in school and get, like, job skills and work on social life skills until the age of 22, and actually get your diploma then too if needed. So, and it was kind of cool, man. When I started, I was 23, and I had a young man in my class that was 21, and, you know, it was almost more or less like teaching your buddy, so to speak. So
what made you want to get into teaching? Did you want to get into teaching special education, or was that kind of just where life fell at 23?
Yeah, no, my mom, lifelong educator. My aunt was a lifelong educator, both retired now. When I finished high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And my mom said, hey, this is a great career path. You know, this is great for somebody with, you know, with your heart. And so really just kind of following the mentorship of my mom and my aunt. And I really did enjoy it. You know, it was really tough for me to quit, but this is obviously a dream of mine, and to kind of run your own business, I think is the ultimate freedom, especially when it comes to the career side of it.
You mentioned your wife does a lot within the industry too. Is she full-time at the brewery too, or is she holding down a full-time job to, cause we do know that trying to open up a brewery isn't necessarily the most lucrative of career paths.
Yeah, no, we started, we're a family business. So it's, me and my wife and brother, sister-in-law, mother and father-in-law. So my wife kind of does the HR side of it. Not full-time. She's got a full-time job herself. but we all kind of play an important role in the business. I would say, obviously, with me doing the brewing when we first started, and then kind of taking over the tap room once I left teaching. So now I'm kind of running the business from a day-to-day point, but I couldn't do it without the help of her or my sister-in-law, who helps with like the financial side of it. My father-in-law, who, you know, comes in and helps any time I ask for help. So it's definitely a group family effort.
Where have been some of your favorite places to do market research across the country? Are you, you know, do you like Chicago maybe because it's a little bit closer, or maybe somewhere in Ohio, like Cincinnati? Like what are some of your favorite spots that you like to do research, we'll call it?
At my own bar, to be honest with you, we're not looking to be a big giant brewery. We kind of like Rob said, just kind of your neighborhood spot, and just hearing what the customers have to say, hearing feedback from our bartenders. I think for me, that's where I'm going to get the most vital information on kind of what to brew or what they liked, what they didn't like, don't brew that again. I think sometimes we think too much outside the box and kind of big picture and don't look at kind of the easy stuff that's right in front of our eyes.
What do you mean by thinking too far outside the box and looking at a big picture?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we don't sell in any grocery stores or any restaurants. Like I said earlier, you kind of have to come to us to drink our beer. So I guess from a marketing standpoint, just kind of figuring out what our customers, our everyday folks really like to drink, and just keeping up with that.
So you're drinking the Kolsch, I believe, right now. Is that your go-to style?
Andy.
I'm sorry, you were drinking your Kolsch. Is that your go-to style when you get out of the bar, or do you prefer other styles?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the day. I'm a hop head at heart. I drank a lot of hazy IPA last night, so just kind of sticking on the lighter, kind of crisper side tonight. I love them all. You know, I don't know if I could necessarily drink Imperial Stout all summer long. That's kind of like a Thanksgiving to Christmas kind of beer. I hammer those hard then. Calories don't count between Thanksgiving and Christmas anyways.
Wait, are you saying you don't mow your lawn while drinking a 18% barrel-aged stout?
That would be impressive, but no, I got to pass on that. I'm definitely drinking something a little bit lighter. I do like a nice big double IPA, and you know, it seems like those are sometimes obviously not as big as big Imperial Stouts, but those can be pretty big themselves. I like those throughout the summer. But yeah, man, I love them all, and sometimes that's what gets me in trouble.
The Pater's beer is perfect in a pumpkin patch.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's a funny, and if I could just like two minutes, tell a quick story. That pumpkin patch, it's funny. I used to be the kind of event person for Best Buddies, or the staff chaperone for our Best Buddies program at the high school. And we started going out to Hogan Farms and kind of meeting the owners, and I really realized that they're a great group to work with, because one year we took a group of our Best Buddy folks out there, and these guys made sure to get these folks on electric wheelchairs up into the hay lofts and making sure every single kid had a great time. So I will support those folks every year that they have it, and go out there every year they have it, just for as good and as sweet as they were to our students at the high school. But yeah, that Pater's beer, I mean, let's be honest, that Pater's beer goes good anywhere.
When you opened in 2017, I believe, correct?
Yes, sir. March 2018. I think the LLC was founded in 2017.
All right. So March 2018, you know, the craft beer industry has definitely gone through a weird change between COVID, between the flavor profiles, and how people have kind of gone really hoppy to a little bit less, the haze craze. What is something you wish you knew in 2018 that you wish you could go back and tell yourself today?
Lift with your legs, not with your back.
Well, that's a good start.
My back's killing me tonight, boys. No, honestly, not to worry about every little thing. I mean, my wife, it used to drive my wife crazy because I would wake up at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning and go in just to check on a fermenter. And you do that so many times, you drive yourself crazy, you burn yourself out, and don't sweat the small stuff. And most of the things we run in life are small things, you know? So yeah, you know, just taking it easy. I've always said once the beer's in the fermenter, you know, I know we're not supposed to say religion, but I'm just going to say it's in God's hands at that point. I can control the temperature the best I can. I can put the, you know, exact amount of yeast in that I can, but I really have no control over the fermentation until it's finished. So not worrying about every little single thing and just enjoying it a little bit more. I wish I would have enjoyed 2018 through hell 2022 a little bit more than I did.
Now I'm looking at all the beers that you have made via your Untappd page. I don't see any NA beers. Are you looking in the process of working with anyone to do any non-alcoholic beers? Is that something that people are asking for as they enter, not just for Dry January, but as people are being a little bit more alcohol conscious?
No. My personal opinion on it, and I get opinions are like armpits. Everyone has them, and most of them stink. Our beer's made to get you buzzed, and if you're not trying to get buzzed, why drink beer? If people want to bring in our tap room NA beers, they're more than welcome to. We have a gentleman that does that on a regular basis, but I have no interest in brewing the NA beers.
Are you able with your license to resell like Athletic or Partake or O'Doul's or something, or like just carry it on for the people that are asking, or?
I don't know. That would probably be like a wife or sister-in-law question. I think so. I know the guy that brings his in and kind of talking with a few people, if it's 0.0, it's not alcohol. But I have seen those, and it's funny, when my wife was pregnant, she was drinking some of those Athletico. Is it in with an O, or is it just Athletic?
Athletico is the leisure brand wear. Athletic is the brewery.
Okay. Yeah, and I actually had one of those. It tasted like an IPA. Someone brought in a Lagunitas 0.0 IPA for me to try, and it was good. It was just like, I don't know, there's something about super hoppy beers. I feel like there's got to be that alcoholiness to it or some yeastiness to it, and I just didn't get that with the Lagunitas one. It was still good, but it's essentially hop water. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, yeah, what about like just regular hop water or hop tea out of Hoplark? That's, you know, just hop infused beverages. They're not even beer.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do that. When we first opened up, we were doing a non-alcoholic root beer for a very short time, and that just kind of became a sticky mess, and I really didn't kind of want to mess with it anymore. But yeah, I don't really have any plans of doing a non-alcoholic beer.
Okay, there is one thing that I do want to mention for the guests that are listening. So there is legal qualifications when you're talking about NA beer. And NA beer can be 0.5% or less. A zero, like Guinness Zero, Lagunitas, I think, or Labatt Zero, can be or has to be 0.0. So if you say 0.0, or you say zero, it has to be 0.0. If you say NA, it can be 0.5 or less.
No, yeah, so you can drive around drinking those in the car. Like in front of a cop, they can't do anything.
I mean, I feel like in the state of Michigan, since we tax and regulate NA beer as beer, they might still consider it open intox. It's something I would not want to upset an MSP officer.
Well, yeah, they would do it because they'd be mad at you because you were doing that and they had to like take the time. So yeah, you're getting something out of it.
What about kombucha?
Kombucha, at least in Michigan, is still regulated as beer. Really? Yeah, because it has alcohol in it. It might be in the realm of cider and wine as opposed to beer, but nonetheless, it's still like taxable in that area. So you still have to be 21 to buy and a beer as you do to buy kombucha.
No shit. Is that how it is here in Indy, Rob?
No, we can buy kombucha. Well, I've only ever bought it in like, I bought kombucha in grocery stores and stuff. Like just in the cooler, normal cooler.
Here in Michigan, we do have at least one two hard kombucha makers too, that do kombucha beer and kombucha tea that is like 5%, not 0.5, but actual 5%. If you are in the state of Michigan, Unity Vibration is the big one. They actually distro fairly well. So if you're looking for something that is easily one of the better kombucha beers out there that I've tried, that's been that's an alcohol kombucha. Before we get into the final questions and let you go for the evening, I know we're running a little bit late. I appreciate your time. I want to go back to the question that Dan asked you about beer flights, because as for me, I understand why people, as in the consumer, likes beer flights, but I feel like you really showed that like beer flights can just be such a pain in the ass when six people come in all wanting six flights of six different beers, and that's 36 tiny glasses. If you could, do you think you could get away with your business model to not have flights anymore?
For us, yeah, I'm sure. I'd have to look and see what we sell in flights. I know just printing off the little papers, I print off maybe 24 a week. So, I would guess so. I mean, it's always good to give folks the option, whether that's a half pint, whether that's a 5 ounce little sampler, whether that's a 16 ounce. I could see getting rid of flights. There would probably be a lot of angry brew bus people, but shit happens.
Do you get the brew bus up there often?
There for a while post COVID, no. There seems to be a new one that's coming, and I couldn't tell you the name of it. But there seems to be a new one coming probably about every weekend or so. Pre-COVID, we were getting them two or three times a week, which is great. Sometimes when they would leave one brewery, and then if you were like the first brewery, it's not that great because everybody's awkward, like a middle school dance, you know, standing around. If you're the last brewery, you might be cleaning up somebody's puke in the bathroom. So it's nice to be either that second or third stop on their trip for the night.
I think in your location you might be last after Deviate, so that would be a problem.
Yeah, you know, they come from there, and you always have a good time when you go to Deviate, so I get it, you know.
All right, as we end each and every show, we ask you a final question that is a little bit more on the lighter side. Then we give you the opportunity to make sure everyone knows where you're located, how to get your beer. We're going to start with Dan. Dan, what's your final question for Bart?
All right. Yeah. Fun question here today. So as y'all recall, all of us here should know about it. Friday, November 19th, 2004, the Malice at the Palace between the Pacers and the Pistons. Bart, did Ron Artest, AKA Meta World Peace, get screwed in the punishment that he got?
I mean, he was laying on the press box. He was trying to just do his thing. You know, some haggard Pistons fan threw a beer at him. I couldn't say that I wouldn't do that. So he was probably in the wrong, but I think we would all go after that fan. I guess you guys are probably Pistons, or Ken, you're probably a Pistons fan. So
so Dan is an original Michigander. He did move to Phoenix 7 or 8 years ago. So yeah, I'm a Pistons fan. Dan at least was a Pistons fan. He's starting to be like a Arizona bro. So
yeah, I'm a hockey fan.
He might like it. Is Steve Nash still playing with the Suns? Is that what you're?
No. What year is it? I think that was 2004.
Yeah, that's funny, Dan. I was in middle school when that happened. Me and my buddies were watching that in our bonus room on a giant, like I don't even think it was a plasma TV. It was one of those giant box TVs we watched that. We're like, dude, is this WWE? What's going on right now?
Such an amazing thing. Like, you'll never see anything like that again. It's just amazing. Yeah. Especially, you know, the rivalry the Pacers and the Pistons had. It made it kind of perfect.
And poor Reggie was on the bench that night and wearing a suit with a cast. And, you know, he wanted to get in that action too, but they're holding him back. So.
Yeah. Remember, Tayshaun's the one that stopped him. You know, that was the change of that whole series.
Yep. I think O'Neal the center then too. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Jermaine O'Neal. Yeah, he was a center back then. Rob, what's your final question for Bart here?
Are we getting an MLS team? Will you do a beer for them if we do?
Sure. Yeah. If they want us to do one, we'll put one together for them. Isn't there a stadium downtown?
They're talking about building one. But not officially MLS. They're talking about building a stadium for the Indy 11.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. If there's, you know, I'm a cage fighting fan myself. So if there was ever any cage fighting promotion that needed like a blood orange IPA or something like that, that would be more up my alley, but soccer's cool too. We would love to do one.
There are an awkwardly large amount of cage fighting and MMA organizations across the United States. I can't tell you how many times I'll go to a casino here in Michigan and you'll see like Joe's MMA Extraordinaire number 38. And you're like, he's fighting. And then, of course, you get like Dan the Beast Severance fighting still because he still needs a paycheck. I guess that's gonna really, really change my question. But if you are, depending on how deep of an MMA fan you are, my question to you is who would actually win in an MMA fight? And these are going to be two MMA fighters, Bobby Lashley or Jack Hager or Jake Hager.
I guess I'm a bit of a casual fan. I don't know either one of those guys.
So those are both former wrestlers that went into MMA. I think they both fought for Bellator. I think Bobby Lashley was a Bellator champion, wasn't he, Dan?
I can't remember. I feel like Hager's had better success, but Bobby was a while ago. I can't remember what he did.
All right, so I'll change the question. Do you think Brock Lesnar could come back into the UFC and have a decent fight in a heavyweight bout?
As much as I would love to say yes, and as much as I'd love to see him in DC at 300, I don't think so. He still has an active contract at the UFC, right? Does he have one fight still left on his contract?
He might. I mean, that might be just, you know, because he got kicked out of the league basically by Alistair Overeem.
Stomach, right?
Yeah, after his diverticulitis and almost dying in the first place.
Didn't he win the last fight, but he got popped for PEDs?
Mark Hunt.
Yeah, Mark Hunt, that's right. Yeah, he won, but then got popped.
Yeah, I think that went to a no contest or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it would go to no contest. That's why CM Punk's technically 0-1-1 because Michael Jackson – got popped for marijuana.
By the way, Bobby Lashley, 15-2.
15-2. Yeah, that ain't a bad, not a bad little thing. At least for being in that beer tier league, B tier league of UFC or MMA, I should say. Yeah. All right, Bart, Traders Brewing. Where are you located? Where can they find you? Why should we see you? Why should we come see you?
Yeah, we're at 8587 Zionsville Road. That's on the northwest side of Indy off of 86th and Zionsville. Open 7 days a week. You should come see us because we're badass. We have a lot of fun. And there's typically a taco truck out in the parking lot on most days. So come hungry, come thirsty, come happy.
All right, that is going to do it for episode 339 of the Better on Draft podcast. No news this week. Come back next week. We will be here. Dan, are you going to be here next week? Because you kind of just you fly to New Zealand as if it's, you know, Tempe.
Casually. Yeah, just casually get on a plane. Yeah, I'll be here.
All right. So that's going to do it. Dan will be back. Wendy will be back next week. For myself, Dan, Rob, and Wendy, thank you so much, Bart, for joining us. Go check them out. Go like us on all of our social medias. That's Better on Draft on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Kick,
X, Insta, I don't know. There's Live Journal. And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Thanks, guys.